From the studios of Books in Motion, this is Henry McNulty reading Night Winds by K.E. Soderbergh. Now let's begin with Night Winds, Chapter 1. Slivers of lightning danced across the barren wilderness, and thunder rolled in the distance as a sudden rain squall moved slowly toward the west. A rain-soaked horseman reined in his horse and pulled a broad-brimmed hat from his head and slapped it against his thigh. He dismounted, then reached up and ran callous fingers through his unruly mop of dark hair, brushing away several wet strands that clung stubbornly to his face. He led his horse and pack animal to a nearby stand of brush, where he removed his saddle and unloaded his pack. Blue Cantor was a powerfully built man, well over 6 foot, with shoulders and arms heavily muscled like those of a blacksmith. The seams of his worn buckskin shirt stretched to the breaking point when he pulled it over his head and dropped it over a clump of brush to dry. He lowered his bulk to the ground and sat Indian style, studying the river that the sudden cloudburst had turned into a raging torrent of water, ripping trees and brush from its bank and carrying them downstream like kindling wood. Blue raised his face to the sun as it peeked from behind the clouds, and placed his hand over the raised purple scars that spread across his cheek, and his mind flooded with the memories of this godforsaken place he'd tried so hard to forget. For years, this barren place was thriving as one of the worst hellhole camps in South Texas. What was left of the body house's ramshackle huts had collapsed and were now home for poisonous reptiles and scorpions, a far better class of inhabitants than the men who frequented this camp in the past. Blue was the bastard son of Bridie Cantor, a woman who worked in one of the huts that lined the riverbanks along this section of the Rio Grande. These camps were the final stop for the whores that were turned out of the more prosperous saloons and body houses in the wide open settlements because of their age, disease, or having become dependent on the opium substance laudanum. Some of the women had been Indian captives. Comancheros roaming the area like jackals traded blankets and trinkets to the Indians for the women, who sold them like cattle to the scum that set up these brothels. The women were treated better in the Indian villages than they were in the border camps. In the camp brothels, they were forced to live in filthy huts where their bodies were sold to men who were more animal than human. In return for their service, the women were given a place to sleep and meager amounts of food. Bridie Cantor ended up as one of these unfortunate women. She was born into a poor settler family, doing their best to eke out a living in this unforgiving land, then orphaned at the age of 14 when her parents died of the fever. Several weeks had passed, and Bridie knew she would never survive the winter on the farm alone. Their closest neighbor was the Jacobs, so she gathered her meager belongings and rode to their farm, hoping she would find shelter there. It was sundown when she rode in and told the Jacobs what happened to her family. Mrs. Jacobs hugged her, then made a pallet on the floor for Bridie to sleep on, and told her she would speak to her husband about Bridie living with them. Bridie heard them talking and pulled a tattered quilt to her mouth to muffle her sobs when she heard Mr. Jacobs tell his wife he was sorry for the girl, but they couldn't let her stay. He said a boy could help him on the farm, but a girl was just another mouth to feed, so he was taking her to the settlement in the morning, and she'd have to find work there. Molly Jacobs wept for the girl, but knew her husband would never change his mind. The following morning, Jacobs tied Bridie's horse to his buckboard and told her to climb up and sit on the seat beside him. Molly Jacobs was crying when she handed Bridie her bundle of clothes and several biscuits wrapped in pieces of cloth. Bridie began to cry as the buckboard bounced down the dirt road that led into town. Lowry was a desolate place that consisted of a sutler store, a livery, and a saloon. Jacobs reined in his team in front of the store, untied Bridie's horse and tied it to the hitch rail, then turned his buckboard around and returned home. Bridie entered the store, where a disheveled little man with a pockmarked face stood watching the buckboard leave town. She cringed when the man...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?